Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 19th, 2024. Well, it's been almost 22 years past since a group of concerned Hamiltonians assembled the Hamilton Coalition to stop the war. Then it was their hope to belay the coming Iraq invasion or pressure Ottawa to stay out of it if the invasion came. The coalition's foundational document, reading in part, "The burning question in the world today is war and peace. America seems to know no bounds in pursuit of its agenda, and we are hearing the drumbeat of illegal and immoral wars become louder and louder." Well, that applies even more so today than all those years and shattered lives ago. Ken Stone is an activist and author working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International. He was one of those founding the Hamilton Coalition to stop the war in 2002. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from his 2016 visit there. Ken and the Hamilton Coalition abide and are at the fore of Canadian resistance to militarism, yet currently ramping up for the No to NATO counter summit in Washington, D.C. They will too be hosting Israeli anthropologist and director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, Jeff Halper, as part of his North American book launch and lecture tour in early July. Ken Stone in the first half. And Canadian mining interest Quantum Minerals is back in business in Panama. Its massive open-pit copper mine had been ordered shut by that country's Supreme Court, found to be operating against the public good in 2021. But a new deal cut with a corrupt government got the wheels churning again. Viviana Herrera is Latin America Program Director for Mining Watch Canada. They are part of an international alliance of environmental and ecology organizations who, along with Panama Val Mas Sin Mineria, recently presented the report Human Rights Violations, Abuses, and Incidents Registered During the Protests Against the Mining Contract in Panama, October-November 2023. It details the negative impacts of Quantum's operation. Viviana Herrera and Cobra Panama, Snake in the Heart of Panama's Threatened Rainforest, in the second half. But first, Ken Stone and the Hamilton Coalition still saying no after all these wars. Welcome back to the show, Ken.
My pleasure, Chris.
Well, Ken, now in the shadow of the Gaza atrocity, the West Bank, too, is suffering escalating horrors. More news coming out even just this morning as I was setting up. Murders by soldiers and settlers alike, destruction of homes, businesses, property, and infrastructure, a daily occurrence. Now, Jeff Halper will be presenting in Hamilton in a couple of weeks. Beyond my introduction, who is Jeff, and what can people can expect when they come out to see him July 2nd in Hamilton?
Okay, well, thanks for that. Jeff Halper is going to be on a Southern Ontario tour at the end of June and the beginning of July. And he'll be stopping in Hamilton on Tuesday, July 2nd for a book launch and lecture at 7:30 p.m. at the Unitarian Church of Hamilton, 170 Dundurn Street South near Main Street. It's a very nice venue, and it's air conditioned. And he himself, Jeff Halper, is the volunteer coordinator of the Israeli Coalition to against home demolitions. And he has been doing this for 32 years, an incredible length of time, most of it unpaid. And what they do is when they hear about a proposed Israeli demolition of a Palestinian home in East Jerusalem or the West Bank, his office organizes people to go out and demonstrate and try and prevent the bulldozers and the soldiers, et cetera, from being able to take down the Palestinian home. In the event that they're not successful, what they often do is start fundraising campaigns to rebuild the house. And so the process in some cases has gone on five or six times over one house. And there have been thousands of Palestinian homes demolished in the West Bank and East Jerusalem over the past 60 or 70 years since the 1967 war, 60 years. So this man has been doing heroic work in fighting the apartheid regime in Israel. He is a university professor by trade. He is an anthropologist. He's taught at U.S. And Israeli institutions. He was even in the IDF reserve for a while, but I guess at that point he had an epiphany and realized what it was he was doing. And since then, he has embarked on an heroic alternate course to stop the Israeli government from its genocidal policies, not just in Gaza, but also in the West Bank. And we think that this will be an exciting event. He's been here. He came here about 10 years ago in Hamilton, and we packed the hall for him. And again, he's coming back. He has a new book. It's called Decolonizing Israel, Liberating Palestine. And so what he's talking about is the settler colonial project in Palestine, some history and how it's worked out to the detriment of the Palestinian people with occupation, killings, illegal settlements, the whole works. And at the same time, the second half of the book is about a one-state solution, talking about an alternate government to the one that exists now, Netanyahu's war government in Jerusalem. And what he is talking about is a new government to replace the apartheid regime, one that would adequately and equally represent Israeli Jews, Israeli Muslims, Israeli Christians. And the belief is that if there was a one-state solution with guarantees for freedom of religion and equal rights and representation, the right of return of the Palestinian refugees, the protection of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, etc., it's possible to have peace in Israel-Palestine. I'm sure Jeff will point to the period before the Israeli colonial project came into being. That is to say, before, I would say, the Balfour Declaration of 1917. Before that, under the Ottoman Empire, Jews, Muslims, and Christians lived in peace and harmony in this ancient city of Jerusalem. And I think what Jeff is going to say is it's possible to do that again.
Well, and his book title is Decolonizing Israel, Liberating Palestine. The event is called Moving Towards a Democratic State for All Between the River and the Sea. It's a evocative title and an evocative phrase when used either by Israelis or Palestinians.
Absolutely. The phrase from the river to the sea is a slogan that we use in all our pro-Palestinian events, and we feel that it's possible to create a one state for all the people who want to stay and live together in peace in Palestine, plus the Palestinian refugees and their families who were kicked out during the Nakba of 1947, the catastrophe in which Israel destroyed some 250 Palestinian villages and expelled some 750,000 Palestinians from their ancestral home in Palestine.
Well, everything that we've seen over more than these last 8 months, but of course, you know, hyper accentuated in these last 8 months, has been the opposite of that. We've seen what looks to be an attempt by hardline Judeo supremacists in Israel, attempt to make of Israel a single Jewish entity, displacing and killing thousands of people in the process to, make of Israel a unitary Jewish state and not a two-state solution or even a one-state solution with more than just a Jewish population.
Well, for my part, I would be happy if the international community, that is to say the UN and relevant bodies, was able even to bring about a two-state solution. I would be happy if the Trudeau government would recognize, give full diplomatic recognition to the state of Palestine as Norway, Spain, and was one other country, Ireland, did Ireland, a couple of weeks ago. Instead, at the UN General Assembly, when there was a vote of the Assembly, which is a non-binding vote, but it was to put pressure on the Security Council to admit Palestine as the 194th state, a member country of the United Nations, Canada abstained from voting. Now, that really angered not just me, not just people in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, but it angered a lot of Canadians, and it angered even a lot of the MPs and Trudeau's own party, because doing so would not have cost Canada a penny, but it would have shown some solidarity with the Palestinian people who are currently suffering a genocide, an explicit genocide, as was determined already in part by the International Court of Justice at The Hague, where they said that it was a plausible genocide, and they came back and put some demands on the state of Israel in order to protect the civilian population, demands which Israel has failed to meet. So at this point, I think that it would be important for Canadians to continue the pressure on Trudeau, because following that vote and the pressure that his own MPs put on him, the government changed its position and said that we don't have to wait until there's a complete and comprehensive solution to the problem of Palestine in order to extend full diplomatic relations with the state of Palestine. We could do it beforehand. So the government was nudged, and we feel that if they're nudged some more, they might go all the way to what Norway, Spain, and Ireland did, and give full recognition to the state of Palestine. Of course, that would be, symbolic, but it's a start. And at this point, after 100 years of the Israeli colonial project, it would be nice if the United Nations got its act together and, brought about a two-state solution, or better yet, as I agree with Jeff Halper, a one-state solution. Much better solution, much more realistic in my view. But what's happened, I have to say, Chris, in the last few days was a very sinister development that took place at the United Nations, and that was that the U.S. proposed a ceasefire deal. And the terms of the ceasefire deal were not clear. All the details were not spelled out. The Russians were set to veto it because they called it a pig in a poke. They didn't know what they were voting for. And furthermore, as I have said, and our coalition has written, and so has the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network, from the very beginning, the post-war settlement was by default left in the hands of the USA. And Blinken has been doing this shuttle diplomacy, going around the Middle East 8 times, I think, so far. And if the peace deal, if the post-war settlement is left in the hands of the U.S. empire, we can be sure that the settlement will not be beneficial to the Palestinians. It will be designed to protect the state of Israel at the detriment of the Palestinians. And so I'm very worried, and most of my colleagues are worried, because the Russians decided not to veto this ceasefire deal. Instead, they abstained. They published a rationale for abstaining, which you can find on my Facebook page, Ken Stone, which says that the Arab world asked them not to veto this resolution. But I think this was a big mistake, because what this resolution does is it puts into the hands of the U.S. the post-war settlement, and that will certainly not be a two-state or a one-state solution. It'll be a continuation of the Israeli colonial project.
Well, when Russia says that this was at the behest of the, quote, Arab world, who does the Arab world represent in their usage? Did they make that clear?
No, they. When I read the rationale, I have to look at it again, but they didn't name the states. And unfortunately, most of the Arab states, with the exception of Syria and Yemen, by the way, the Ansarallah movement is not recognized as the government of Yemen by the United Nations. It's still the Saudi Arabian puppet regime of 2015. So it's really among the Arab states, there's only one or two that are not in the pocket of the U.S. government. And I would say that would be Syria and Algeria. And even in this case, Algeria apparently wanted the Russian government not to use its veto. So the Arab states, the Arab world that the Russians were referring to was, I guess, all the Arab state leaders minus Syria.
It's interesting that you talk about the United Nations. Before going on the air, I was watching a press conference by the United Nations Human Rights Tribunal, who accuse Israel of extermination. And this is the term is a legal term. It seems like a heightened level of atrocity going on at the same time that the Russians seem sanguine, as you explain, to allow the authors of this tragedy, which is, in my view, America, to also be the arbiters of any settlements after the fact. This is like allowing the murderer to be the judge on his own trial, it seems.
That's a good analogy. That's a very good analogy. And I don't think most people are aware of the fact that none of this, well, I guess many people are aware of the fact that the genocide that Israel is waging in Gaza and the occupation in the West Bank are entirely supported by the U.S. If without the U.S. backing, the state of Israel could not wage their wars against Gaza and the West Bank, nor against Hezbollah in the north. And it's important to note that Israel was, in the terms of one U.S. politician, the unsinkable aircraft carrier for the U.S. in the Middle East. And that's why Biden is backing them to the hilt. And it's a sad state of affairs when the international community, I mean the whole UN, hands over the settlement to be worked out by the U.S. And as you say, it's like handing over to a murderer or an accomplice in the murder the position of judge, jury, and executioner.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ken Stone. Ken's an activist and author working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International. He was one of those founding the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War in 2002. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from his 2016 visit to that country. We're speaking today about the Hamilton Coalition's upcoming event that features Jeff Halper moving towards a democratic state for all between the river and the sea. That will be held in Hamilton at the Unitarian Church, July 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Look into it today. Well, Ken, on the issue of war and more war, you're also focusing on anti-NATO actions going on, no to NATO. There's a rally almost as we speak today at 3 p.m. Eastern. There'll be a big demo in Ottawa, dismantle NATO, and they're calling Jens Stoltenberg persona non grata. Is he scheduled to arrive in Ottawa?
Yes, he's probably there right now. He's there scheduled to deliver a lecture and then receive the Saint Laurent Award, whatever that is, on behalf of the Canadian government. And it's a really reprehensible act by the Trudeau government to bring this warmonger general, I call him the warmonger general, he's actually Secretary General of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is the U.S. military alliance, which has precipitated a war with Russia, using Ukraine as its proxy, they under Stoltenberg and his predecessors, NATO has violated its promises to Gorbachev and other Russian presidents not to expand NATO one inch eastward of a reunited Germany. The ink was hardly dry on the memorandums, which you can find in the National Security Archives. If you Google it, you will see and Google what Gorbachev heard. And you will hear that he was told repeatedly by responsible politicians and diplomats from the West that NATO would not expand one inch eastward. Instead, it expanded 800 kilometers eastward and took in 14 former Soviet and Warsaw Pact states. And it overthrew the government in Ukraine in 2014. And it installed a government riddled with neo-Nazis, which waged war on its Russian-speaking people in the East. And that precipitated the Russian special military operation, which we are now in for 2.5 years. And Stoltenberg comes to Ottawa just at a time when NATO has just upped the ante even more. NATO, and specifically four of the leading members of NATO, that is the U.S., the U.K., Britain and France, France and Germany, have decided to give long-range missiles for the use of the Ukrainians to be fired deep into Russia. Now, the problem with these missiles is that they're not giving control of the missile systems to the Ukrainians. What it is that these missile systems are integrated units of the entire military of those four countries. And the military intelligence comes from spy satellites in space, which they're not handing over to the Ukrainians, and from AWACS planes, usually U.S. AWACS planes, flying along the frontiers of Russia, which are beamed down to military missile installations, which are situated in Ukraine. But they're not run by Ukrainians because it's a too complex process, and the four countries would not hand over these complex systems to the Ukrainians. What they do is at the last moment, just before they're ready to fire, they call in a Ukrainian soldier, and he presses the launch button, and the missile goes. So they're under the pretext of this being Ukraine firing the weapon. It's actually a weapons system that's totally under the control of the U.S., U.K., France, and Germany. And these missiles that land on Russian soil, from the point of view of the Russians, are acts of war by NATO against Russia, using Ukraine as the launching pad. And what's scary is that the Russian government repeatedly has warned that it will retaliate. And it might retaliate by knocking out the spy satellites in the sky. It might knock down an AWACS plane, or it might fire missiles tit for tat right back into NATO countries, in which case NATO will immediately call a conference and invoke Article 5, which says collective security against a foreign threat. And so then we are into a nuclear confrontation. In other words, we are two steps away from a possible nuclear war right now. It's the most dangerous situation for humanity since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. And our government, our politicians of all five opposition parties, and our mainstream media are doing Canadians a great disservice by not bringing to their attention the perilous situation that we are in right now. Phil Taylor, in his show recently called Sleepwalking to Armageddon, I think that's what he called it. You can find it on my Facebook page. Says this is the most dire situation we could possibly imagine. And instead of informing the Canadian people and taking action to defuse the situation, what they are doing is bringing Stoltenberg, the warmonger general, to Ottawa and giving him a prize and applauding him for coming up with this stupid plan to allow long-range missiles to be fired into Russia by NATO. What we should be doing instead, what should happen instead, is that Trudeau, for his part, he could easily do this, or Melanie Joly, and they haven't done it in 2.5 years, is to pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone and dial their counterparts in Russia and have a conversation as to what it would take to end this war in Ukraine without further deaths and without further sending of huge amounts of money from Canada to Ukraine. And that's what we're going to talk about. That's what's going to be talked about today at 3 o'clock, I imagine, in the crowd who are protesting Stoltenberg. And it's certainly what we're going to be talking about tomorrow night at the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network, when we talk about the counter summit that's going to be taking place in Washington, D.C., July 5th to 7th, as a counter to the NATO's 75th anniversary summit there in Washington, D.C. And in Canada here, we will be talking about tomorrow night at our network, organizing solidarity events across Canada, hopefully, you know, rallies, demonstrations, pickets of MPs' offices. Tamara Lorenz has a parliamentary petition that is now active, became active a few days ago, to ask Canadians to sign for Canada to withdraw from NATO. We'll have watch parties. We'll try and do a whole bunch of things to make Canadians aware of the absolutely perilous situation that the world is in right now.
Well, Ken, there's a ton more to talk about, but we don't have time. The Stoltenberg's on his way out. I think this is a farewell tour already. Or Mark Rutte, I think he's from the Netherlands, is slated to be his replacement, it seems. There's still some political wrangling going on, but I don't think it really matters so much. There's a ton to talk about more with Syria, with Lebanon. The war is hot. You didn't mention the other scary element in Ukraine, where it was the bombing of Russia's early warning, like their dew line, over the horizon long-range missile warning system that they ground-based warning system that they have. The Ukrainians were effectively knocking out their eyes for incoming nukes, intercontinental variety, which makes things very tense indeed. Ken, before we go, your Facebook page, what is it that, where can people go?
It's Ken Stone, my Facebook page, and our coalition is the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. It has a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and we have a website as well, and it's hamiltoncoalitiontostopthewar.ca.
Thanks a lot, Ken, for coming on. Remember, Jeff Halper, if you're in Hamilton July 2nd, he's on a Canadian tour. You can see his other dates by going to the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca website. Facebook, Ken Stone, and the counter summit, the NATO counter summit in Washington, D.C., July 5th and 7th. Thanks a lot, Ken, for coming on again and bringing us up to speed a little bit on this. I'm really watching the Lebanon thing. It's getting super hot right now. We don't have time to talk about it today, as I said, but that really looks like something that is going to be happening imminently, if it happens. Maybe another bluff, who knows. I want everyone to stick around. I'm going to take a break, but Viviana Herrera is going to be back. She's from Mining Watch Canada after the break. Thanks a lot, Ken.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. This bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire, fire.
What's more important, gender, race, or class? Give me the wrong answer and I'll have to kick your ass. Do black lives matter a little or do they matter a lot? What were you doing on the night that Betty Jones was shot? Do you really care? If so, then how much? Or are you some kind of privileged person completely out of touch? Let's argue about it. Let's be perfect little tools. Let's play the game of the billionaires, the old divide and rule.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Canadian mining interest Quantum Minerals is back in business in Panama. Its massive open pit copper mine had been ordered shut by that country's Supreme Court, found to be operating against the public good in 2021. But a new deal cut with a corrupt government got the wheels churning again. Viviana Herrera is Latin America Program Coordinator for Mining Watch Canada. They are part of an international alliance of environmental and ecology organizations